Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, February 4th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri. Here are our top stories this evening. The World Bank projects that the Zimbabwe economy is likely to grow by only 1.5% this year.
At the moment, we project growth to be around 1.5%. We think growth of services sectors will continue to be really sound at above 3%. We expect modest growth in mining and in manufacturing.
Some civil servants expressed skepticism over reports that the government will pay outstanding 2015 bonuses starting this month.
We just also learned about it when we read the papers today, but we are quite disturbed as an organization that the government continues not to respect the fora that we are supposed to meet and discuss issues.
And Mutare City Council disconnects water supplies to thousands of residents.
Most of the residents, they are getting the supply of water, but they have not been paying for that supply. So if we decided to disconnect the water supply so that the residents should come up and pay.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The World Bank has launched its first edition of its Zimbabwe Economic Update, or Zimbabwe or ZEU, focusing on changing growth patterns, improving health outcomes. The bank says Zimbabwe's economy will grow by 1.5% in 2016 and consumer prices will remain deflationary due to global and local constraints on its recovery. Growth, the World Bank says, has slowed sharply since 2012 as the impact of dollarization ran its course and the economy's vulnerability to climate and terms of trade shocks resurfaced. It says the global economy is slowing. Commodity prices remain depressed, terms of trade with Zimbabwe's main trading partners are deteriorating, and the impact of the El Nino on agriculture, water and power sectors is already being felt. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa had projected that the economy will grow by 2.7% this year, up from 1.5% in 2015. But World Bank Zimbabwe senior economist Johannes Hidaski tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu in an exclusive interview that prospects for growth are constrained in Harare.
At the moment, we project growth to be around 1.5%. We think growth of services sectors will continue to be really sound at above 3%. We expect modest growth in mining and in manufacturing. And then the agriculture sector is really having a very difficult year this year. That if you your listeners may know about developments in the rural areas, and it is just the news that is from rural areas, it is just very difficult, and we take that into account in our growth projections.
The World Bank has also used the word deflation. May you explain what this means?
Well, deflation is the opposite of inflation. Inflation is you use when the prices are increasing, and deflation is when prices are falling. And at the moment, on aggregate in total, consumer prices are at the moment falling in Zimbabwe. That is, Zimbabwe uses the U.S. dollar, and in the prices are dollar-denominated, and these prices are coming down at the moment.
And what steps must Zimbabwe take to address its economic challenges?
Difficult global and climatic developments have made it imperative to and accelerate and intensify the policy reforms that can speed up the restructuring and the recovery of the Zimbabwe economy to counter the effects of external shocks. Many reforms initiatives have been started over the past few years, and some even more recently, labor market flexibility, leasing of redistributed and state agricultural lands, clarification of indigenization rules, easing the cost of doing business, mining fiscal framework, state-owned enterprise governance. There is a lot. But even though many of these reforms are not particularly costly from a fiscal point of view, they may have involved difficult political compromises, and very few of them have been fully completed, and so the impact on the economic recovery is delayed. In a difficult year like this, we encourage the authorities to really refocus their efforts to complete these reforms.
And from your dealings with Harare, would you say there is a commitment to implement some of the recommendations that you are listing here?
Yes, I think there is, on a lot of these things, there's really strong progress. And I think many of the people in government really want to see these things completed. It is just that some of the discussions within government, they take time. And that is to some extent normal. But at the moment, the pressures to complete these reforms are stronger because of the difficult situation in the country.
How are you working with Zimbabwe to turn around its struggling economy?
Well, Zimbabwe is still in arrears to the World Bank and to other creditors, so we don't have access to our normal lending instruments. But we do have a trust fund, which is the Zimbabwe Economic Recovery Fund, the ZIMREF fund, we call it, that allows us to provide limited resources in a small number of sectors. We have a small project in the water sector, which was signed yesterday.
That was World Bank Zimbabwe senior economist Johannes Hidaski speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Washington, D.C. We will air another edition of this interview tomorrow here on Studio 7. Don't miss it. In a related development, Central Bank Governor Jane Mangujga today blamed the decline of Zimbabwe's economy on externalization and other leakages, saying $2 billion was externalized last year. Presenting his monetary policy today, Mangujga said some $684 million was exported to foreign accounts by individuals, while companies externalized $1.2 billion.
According to our statistics and records, $684 million was externalized by individuals in this country last year for various purposes that include donations to themselves, investments to their own accounts, account transfers, and firms on their part, companies on their part, they externalize $1.2 billion in the form of export sales proceeds and highly inflated management fees, technical fees, and professional fees to their shareholders. Such funds leave Zimbabwe without money circulating the economy because we are withdrawing from the system and take it out of the economy, resulting in lower multiplier effect and lower aggregate demand in the economy, hence deflation.
Mangujga recommended the resuscitation of an economic crimes court to deal with all financial transgressions. He also ordered that starting tomorrow, cash withdrawals of more than $10,000 will have to be reported to the bank a day ahead.
All those customers of banks who want to withdraw money, all individuals or all companies, who want to withdraw an amount of above $10,000, we need to give banks prior reasonable notice of not less than a day for them to withdraw amounts above $10,000. We want to put in limits. We are putting prudential regulations, policies to ensure that the market survives. Other jurisdictions, like even in America, they've resorted to management of currency or cash transactions by enforcing maximum reportable cash limits that can be carried on person and or withdrawn from financial institutions to guard against money laundering.
For perspective, Blessing Zulu reached economic analyst Prosper Chitambara, who said the policy is sound.
It's quite a positive and a pragmatic monetary policy statement under the circumstances. I think the governor has made mention of a number of things that need to be done to address some of the challenges in the monetary and financial system in Zimbabwe. It mentioned the need to plug leakages of money out of Zimbabwe. And he actually indicated that we have lost about $1.8 billion US dollars through these illicit financial outflows. So they are trying to put in place measures to plug or to minimize or to eliminate these leakages. He also talked about the need to introduce transparency with respect to the sale of diamonds. I think that will go a long way in ensuring that at least government gets something through the sale of diamonds. If there is transparency, I think that will go a long way. Then the cost of finance also, he talked about the need to reduce the cost of finance so that companies, especially those in the productive sectors, can actually borrow money cheaply. And when they're able to access cheap money, it also has a bearing on the cost of doing business. There are also ongoing banking sector reforms. As you know, the banking amendment bill is awaiting appendage signing by the president of Zimbabwe. And once it's signed, I think it will also go a long way in ensuring that we punish some errant bankers who have been abusing depositors' funds. And that will probably go a long way also in ensuring that there is some confidence within the financial system.
That was economic analyst Prosper Chitambara on the line from Harare with Blessing Zulu. Some organizations representing civil servants have expressed skepticism over reports that the government will pay outstanding 2015 bonuses starting this month up to May this year. In a statement, the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe viewed the move as a major victory against the government, which it had given up to the middle of this month to pay the bonuses or face industrial action. But the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe said there was nothing to celebrate as they were entitled to the bonuses. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa is quoted by the state-controlled Herald newspaper as saying that soldiers will get bonuses this month, followed by members of the police force, prison services and health sectors. Teachers will be paid bonuses in April, with the rest of the civil servants getting theirs in May. Cecilia Alexander, president of the Public Service Association, tells Studio 7 they are not sure whether to celebrate or not because the government has not officially represented any bonus payment plans to state workers.
We just also learned about it when we read the papers today, but we are quite disturbed as an organization that the government continues not to respect the fora that we are supposed to meet and discuss issues. And this is a clear indication that they don't respect organized labor. So we are saying everything that concerns us should be first of all presented to us before it is presented to the nation. And we are saying it is very difficult for us to just believe after reading these media reports. Because sometimes the media can go to town about the issues. And we are saying we need to be informed formally. There is a forum where we are supposed to meet the workers' representatives and government. And that is the NGNC. And we expect that the information should come through the NGNC.
Are you going to approach the government over this issue?
Yes, we are going to make a follow-up because our members also need the correct information. They need official information. So I'm told there's a meeting that has been penciled for next week. But Mr. Jongaiti is still not desirable that the information is already in the papers and the whole nation has been informed about it before us also sitting down to discuss this issue.
What about the other issues that you have been raising all along? Pertaining to your conditions of service, are you going to present this to the government?
Yes, there are a lot of issues that we have been presenting. Some of them we've presented them for more than 2 years now, and most of the issues or promises have remained pies in the sky.
That was Public Service Association President Cecilia Alexander speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, a closer look at opposition parties' role in Zimbabwe's social, economic, and political problems. But first, a look at regional and international news. An Israeli court has sentenced two Israelis, one to life in prison and another for 21 years, for the 2014 murder of a Palestinian teen. A crime that helped spark events that led up to the Gaza War later that year. U.S. President Barack Obama says religious faith can help people overcome their fears and embrace their common humanity. Latin American health ministers are backing a public information campaign and boosting the number of medical workers to fight the mosquito-borne Zika virus. The 14 officials held emergency talks in Montevideo, Uruguay today. They include Brazil, which has been hit the hardest by the virus. And the body of a missing Italian graduate student has been found on the outskirts of the Egyptian capital, Cairo, after his disappearance in late January. Italy's foreign ministry says Giulio Regeni's body was found Wednesday in a Cairo suburb along the road that leads to the city of Alexandria. He was covered with burns and other wounds, indicating he may have been tortured. Zimbabwe's opposition parties have over the years been accused of failing to craft a formidable front to wrestle power from President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party, which has ruled the country for more than 35 years. Some critics argue that the parties are too ideologically fragmented to challenge ZANU-PF, currently facing an internal strife that is threatening to tear it into factions, one allegedly led by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and another said to be sympathetic to First Lady Grace Mugabe and calling itself Generation 40 or G40. The factions are fighting over the succession of 91-year-old President Mugabe, who has already been handpicked by his party for the 2018 presidential poll. He will be 94 when he contests that election. The big question is, are Zimbabwe's opposition parties watching the ZANU-PF succession wars while the country is almost crumbling? For Perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reached George Mkwananzi, deputy spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party, and Gibson Moyo, Bulawa regional coordinator of the National Constitutional Assembly. Mkwananzi says some opposition parties are not watching political conflicts in ZANU-PF as they are busy attempting to entice ruling party members to join them.
ZANU-PF is crumbling, it is disintegrating like a deck of cards. Fine, we are watching. It's not like there is any institutional way that we can penetrate ZANU-PF and cause it to fall even further. But there are other things that people can do behind closed doors. ZANU-PF has a following, so to speak. So where you can catch them, you know, hard is to target their supporters when they are still busy, you know, lampooning each other. We target their supporters. We try to seduce them and get them to follow us, because you point out to them that you are following a party that is crumbling, that has not achieved anything for you. Right now, they are busy on each other's throats. So the best way to come out of this quagmire as Zimbabwe is to rally behind the parties that have a clear program of the emancipation of Zimbabwe. ZANU-PF has run out of ideas. The only energy that they have now is to start a process of self-slaughter. The people want to be involved in that, then it is at their risk that they may choose to be part of such a process.
So, Mr. Moyo, you are hearing what Mr. Mkwananzi is saying. But at the end of the day, it appears as if there's nothing that is being done by opposition parties to actually rectify what is happening in Zimbabwe. You're just watching, right?
No, you see, the problem with these political parties, they are mainly concerned about what is happening within their parties. And most of them, they are only concerned with the power struggle. So at the end of the day, you find that people are not doing much in what is happening within the political situation in Zimbabwe. So, as NCA, as a political party, NCA is going to be a very, very different political party from all these political parties that are within the country. You know, people will be saying that we are a very, very small party. But at the end of the day, what is important is that the issues that are on the ground, because this is what we NCA is concerned about.
Yes, Mr. Mkwananzi, you know, Mr. Moyo is talking about, you know, being proactive. And at the end of the day, it seems as if maybe there is absolutely nothing that these parties are doing, your party and others, are doing on the ground to rectify this kind of problem that Zimbabwe is facing.
Yeah, admittedly, it's limited. I mean, the party ZANU-PF is a different entity altogether. There is very little that one can do inside ZANU-PF to stabilize ZANU-PF or to cause a wedge between them, the parties or the factions that are fighting in there. However, what I can say is that The fact that ZANU-PF can afford, that ZANU-PF has the luxury to start fighting amongst each other and the kind of chaos and pandemonium that everybody is witnessing, is reflective of the weakness of the opposition. That is one thing that has to be admitted. ZANU-PF, if it is faced with a formidable enemy that is threatening to sweep the ground under their feet, they are forced to close ranks and, reunite. The fact that they were able to win a supermajority in parliament in the past election through hook or crook is what has given them the courage to engage in the kind of quarrels and bickering that they have at the moment, which is happening at the expense of the nation. So I think I can agree to a certain extent that the weakness of the opposition, the disintegration that has happened in the opposition itself, has afforded ZANU-PF the luxury to engage in its own a chaos that is affecting Zimbabwe as a whole.
So, Mr. Moyo, what should you do as opposition parties to actually fight for the political stakes in Zimbabwe? Because at the end of the day, it seems as if you're not helping matters at all.
I think it all depends with the, you know, the political parties in Zimbabwe. They've got a different attitude towards what is happening. So as opposition parties, I think most of these political parties are they are only concentrating in removing ZANU-PF when they don't have anything that is going to be, you know, that is tangible that they are going to offer to the people. So you find that most political parties they are not concentrating on what is supposed to be given, what is going to be given to the people. They are only concentrating in removing ZANU-PF as a party. But now they don't offer what are they going to give to the people once they are in power.
So what is the NCA going to offer if ever it's going to be in power? I think you can answer that, right?
People can say that NCA is not a very strong party. We are still a new party that is growing. And when something is starting, people will always criticize that you guys, there's no way where you are going. You are just an entity within the country. But I can promise you that as a political party, it's going to be a very strong party that is going to offer what all these political parties are not offering.
That was Gibson Moyo, coordinator of the National Constitutional Assembly based in Bulawayo, and George Mkwananzi, deputy spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. The Mutare City Council has disconnected water supplies to 300,000 residents in an attempt to recover a 20 million debt in unpaid service delivery charges. Residents claim that they do not have money to pay bills due to the current harsh economic situation in Zimbabwe. Our correspondent Loida Moyo has more details from the Manicaland provincial capital.
The local authority, which is facing serious financial challenges, is pressing residents and state entities to pay bills as its activities are almost grinding to a halt. The council was forced to pay the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, which it is owing thousands of dollars through a garnish order. Mutare Mayor Tatinda Namarare has justified the current onslaught on the residents, insisting that they should pay whatever they owe to the council.
Most of the residents, they are getting the supply of water, but they have not been paying for that supply. So if we decided to disconnect the water supply so that the residents should come up and pay, we are actually encouraging the residents to come up to the local authorities and make payment plans with the local authority, rather than for them just to sit down and use the water for free.
Namarare says the council needs to fund and to buy refuse collection vehicles and for paying service providers while giving local residents required services. Mutare resident Charles Waziwei says the council should negotiate with the local people for payment of water and refuse collection charges instead of just switching off water taps.
These council people, they are supposed to maintain the water main supplies. The main pipes, meaning these main pipes from the tanks. One day water, next day there is no water. While some of the days the water is coming dirty.
Another Mutare resident, Douglas Pachiti, says the council is right in disconnecting water supplies for non-paying local inhabitants, as some people are now used to accessing free services.
Well, I think that one is a good idea, a broad one taken by the municipality of Mutare. They need to repair things. People need to be paid. So where is the money coming from? It's coming from us. So for us to have a good service, we should pay for it.
But David Mtambirwa, the coordinator of the Mutare Residents and Ratepayers Association, says the council should have some means of ensuring that the residents are not exposed to health hazards due to water disconnections.
Apparently, water is an essential service. Water is a right, is enshrined in the Constitution of Zimbabwe. And for us to say that the city council, because it provides water, it has the prerogative to cut water, it becomes a violation of human rights.
The council insists that they need to recover the money owed by the residents before negotiating with them for paying in installments. There are now fears of an outbreak of cholera and other contagious diseases in the Eastern Borders town, as some residents have gone for several days without water. They are now drawing water from unprotected water points. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
As the world and Zimbabwe commemorate World Cancer Day today, some cancer survivors say early detection was the key to their survival. They believe that people should always go for early screening to avoid fatalities. This year's theme is We Can, I Can. Cervical cancer survivor Talent Yakado says this is an appropriate theme as it gives power to the people to take the future of their health into their own hands, especially by going for early screening. Yakado was diagnosed with cervical cancer a few years ago. The United Nations says cancer is the leading cause of death worldwide, accounting for 8.2 million deaths in 2012. Yakado speaks to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawie about cervical cancer and how it was detected in her body.
I was detected early, and after delivering my baby, my third son, that's when I went for a family planning session. And when I went there to the hospital, they inserted the rod, but the other rod kept on coming out three times, so I had to go back three times. But then I had to change the hospital because I thought maybe the nurse was not putting the rod properly. So when I came to the hospital, I went to Harare. Oh, this was happening in Mwange. Then I started to go to Harare. When I went to Harare, that's when the nurse said, I cannot put in another rod before I test you because you are married and maybe something happened in between before you came to for the clinic. So first she inserted, she did some tests, and then she found that I had a lot of bacteria inside me. And then she suspected the STI, but later on to realize there were not the gonorrhea or hepatitis that she thought she was treating me for. But after 6 months of treatment and going back to the hospital, that's when she realized it was HPV that was causing cervical cancer at the mouth of my uterus, and it was still at early screening stages.
So what would you urge other women, judging from your experience, to do? We see today is World Cancer Day and is running under the theme We Can, I Can.
I encourage other women that we can help each other as much as we can talk about cervical cancer. It's not something that we have to shun and close the door. We can help each other. I survived it. I can survive. Anyone can survive it. So I encourage other women and urge them for early screening, early detection.
That was Talent Yakado, a survivor of cancer, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawie from Harare. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7's live talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts of the Women's Forum, Praxidis Jeremiah and Marvelous Mhlanganyawie, will be talking with listeners and experts about different ways of tackling cancer. And now to recap today's top stories. The World Bank projects that the Zimbabwe economy is likely to grow by only 1.5% this year. Some civil servants express skepticism over reports that the government will pay outstanding 2015 bonuses starting this month. And Mutare City Council disconnects water supplies to thousands of residents. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele within Tungamilinkomo. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.